This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we've got a big story on voters in Houston and how the media is misreporting it. One Central Texas tax office accused of facilitating theft. And we've also got a key Democrat who's caught organizing with Republicans in the race for Speaker of the Texas House. In our interview, we talked to State Rep Matt Rinaldi about local liberty, and we'll close with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan on the dangers of TDS. Welcome back, friends and patriots, to Texas Scorecard Radio, your source for news affecting taxpayers here in the Lone Star State. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. We'll get started with this week's news. For that, I'll go up to Aaron Anderson, who's been working the election and election fraud beat here in the state. And a big story out of Harris County getting coverage over the past couple of weeks. A bunch of voters there getting wrongly kicked off the rolls, kind of started as a good reform effort, and then the media got a hold of it, and the government officials got a hold of it. Tell us a little bit about what's going on down in Harris County.
Well, that's right, Tony. We reported a few weeks ago on an effort by an individual to help clean up the Harris County voter rolls by just doing a little citizen activist research, identifying about 4,000 voters around the county on the rolls who were registered at addresses that didn't seem to correspond to a residence, which is how you have to register to vote in Texas and everywhere else.
Yeah, basically, you had this citizen there who's going above and beyond, doing the work, saying, "Hey, I care about good integrity in elections. I care about making sure that we don't have people voting who shouldn't be voting." And what can you do as a citizen? Well, let's go look at the rolls and see if we can find some registrations that are bad. And they came across 4,000. Of these entries, associated with, I think it was business addresses, P.O. boxes, that sorts of thing, and so submits this to the voter registrar.
Right, and that's actually a very specific portion of the state's election code. Voter registrars in the counties aren't really allowed to question voters' residency when they register to vote, but individuals can. And so
that's one of the things I think I've been surprised to learn over the last few years is that there isn't necessarily some government official out there who's checking the homework when it comes to elections. Everybody's very clerical in how they handle things. It really is up to citizens like this Alan Vera, like this guy in Houston, to stand up and say, "Hey, I'm going to go do the work to make sure that things are being done correctly in my community."
That's right. And Alan Vera is a longtime election integrity advocate. He has testified at the state legislature on various election reforms. He's very familiar with the election code. He just also happens to work on the ballot security committee of the Republican Party of Harris County, which is how the partisan accusations started flying.
Yeah, and so tell us about how the voter registrar kind of messed this up and then what the narrative the media ran with after that.
Right. Well, the challenge process is laid out in the code. It's very simple. Once there's a challenge, the registrar sends a form notice to these voters saying, "Hey, we need some clarification on the address at which you're registered. Please send us back this notice within 30 days. And if we don't hear from you, we'll put you on what's called the suspense list." Now, the suspense list doesn't mean you can't vote. It means the next time you come in to vote, we're going to ask you at the polls to please verify your address. It means there's a question for
right,
some reason.
Right. Sounds logical.
It does. However, the Harris County Voter Registrar and Harris Bennett, her office managed to mess it up by putting some of these challenge voters directly onto the suspense list.
Yeah, so they jumped the gun. They didn't wait for the mail to come in. They just say, "Hey, let's put these people on the suspense list because there's a complaint in." Wrong process. Now, what's interesting to me is what the Harris County media, the mainstream left-wing media ran with here. They look at this Republican involved with filing the complaint in this action. They say, "Oh, the Republicans are trying to suppress Democrat votes."
Right. Well, just a couple of members of the media ran with that story. One voter came forward. He happened to live in the third ward. He proclaimed he'd gotten a letter, had checked and found he was already put on the suspense list, didn't really know what to make of it, but deduced from that it was a mean Republican plot to strike a bunch of Democrat voters from the rolls. Houston Press reported this inaccurately. The Democrat Party chair there jumped on it, sent out a fundraising email saying, you know, oh, voter suppression. Turned out a little research by a better reporter over at the Houston Chronicle found it just wasn't true at all, completely unsupported.
Basically, you have these challenges spread out all over the map, right?
That's right. All over the city, Democrats and Republicans, no particular neighborhood targeted at all.
Yeah. Well, it's another example here of bad media reporting. Did anybody even report? Of course, the registrar made the error is a Democrat.
Right. Exactly. We reported that when we saw this one gentleman saying he was immediately put on the suspense list. We're like, hey, that is a mistake by the registrar if that's what's happened, because that's not how this process works at all.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your reporting on it, Aaron, and it's just another example of why listeners and readers out there need to be coming to Texas Scorecard to read the news, not trusting what they might read in the liberal press.
Absolutely, Tony.
Next, let's turn to Jacob Asmussen with our Central Texas Bureau and a grand jury in Austin saying that there was a big, basically criminal enterprise being run out of the Travis County Tax Office. Tell us about that.
That's right, Tony. The state has called this a big organized scheme. Recently, seven people were arrested, four of them employees. They, DPS officials raided the tax office, found all kinds of documents, $72,000 in cash. It was a big deal.
Yeah, and so tell us, what was going on there in the office? A big scheme to do what?
So it was related to vehicle title transfers and registrations. And basically, the tax office has contracted with an outside vehicle title service. And what this county audit found was that employees in the tax office were fudging numbers related to the vehicles, basically fudging documents to try to evade taxes, and they found that they were getting bribed to do this.
Wow. And so, taking money out of the coffers and going, all right, put that in my pocket.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about the report. So, grand jury report out on this. Not just a few bad actors. I mean, they're kind of pointing the finger at the whole office.
Yeah, exactly. This report said that this lack of accountability went to the top of the office. They found that there was a pervasive lack of supervision and apparent willful dereliction of duty of the supervisors.
Any idea of how much the taxpayers are out because of this scheme?
So this report said that because of this poor management, of a lack of accountability, supervisors were encouraging employees to either ignore or just approve questionable documents. And so this report said because of this just poor management, it facilitated the theft of potentially millions of taxpayer dollars.
So, you know, one of the takeaways for me from this is that this came as a result of an audit, right?
It did.
Yeah, and so it's really interesting. Right now, story, you know, you've been covering separately, City of Austin fighting against a detailed audit. Mm. Maybe all of us out there as taxpayers need to be saying, hey, we need more of these audits to catch this kind of behavior.
We do, and taxpayers deserve this kind of transparency. They deserve to know what's going on in the city's financial operations. You know, what is the city, what is the county doing with our money? You know, and like you said, the city of Austin is fighting it. Well, why would they fight it? Because it's an excellent opportunity to find inefficiencies and streamline government, make it more productive, use money better. So well, why would they fight that?
Just to get rid of the cronyism and to clean up government, that's, I think, the point.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your reporting on it, Jacob. I think this probably isn't the last bit of coverage on what's going on with the Travis County Tax Office.
Appreciate it.
Now for some Capitol news, let's turn to Brandon Waltons, Capitol Bureau Chief with Texas Scorecard. One of the top Democrats in the Texas House of Representatives wanting to play a big role in picking the next speaker. Tell us about that.
Yes, a top state representative in the Texas House, Democrat Trey Martinez Fisher, emailing around to his colleagues, Republicans, Democrats, saying he basically wants a role in selecting the next speaker, wants to play kingmaker.
Yeah, and so give listeners a little bit of a background of what's going on on there in the Texas House and why the Democrats would care.
Yeah, so for the first time in a while, you have an open race for the Speaker of the Texas House. Speaker Joe Strauss announced his retirement last year, and so you've got a field that includes a few Republicans, Democrats entered, and you've got Trey Martinez Fisher, a Democrat, right, essentially emailing these Republicans, talking to them, and wanting to be in charge of the process.
Yeah, basically saying, we need to work together to fight the governor.
Right. Right. And Trey Martinez Fisher, of course, he is a far left state representative, for sure. I mean, he referred to Governor Greg Abbott infamously as El Diablito.
Oh, yes.
The little devil.
Yeah, the playing, he had these playing cards. Yeah. Literally had the governor with little devil horns coming out of
exactly.
his head.
Exactly. So this is
handing
not,
these out at the Democratic convention.
Right. This is not some moderate, you know, centrist. He is a far left liberal Democrat state representative.
And so let's talk a little bit about what, I mean, he's seen a very real fear. Basically, the Democrats have had a coalition arrangement with liberal Republicans under Strauss for the last 10 years. And so this guy's coming in saying, hey, you know, I'm fearing that this is slipping away. We all need to get our ducks in a row. That's what's going on.
Right. And in the email, he alludes, you know, we need to unify so we can essentially fight against the governor, against the Senate, against the judiciary, you know, bodies that are controlled right now by conservatives.
And right now, you see the Republicans making efforts to unite in the caucus to pick a Republican speaker.
Right. And so learning from the mistakes where Speaker Joe Strauss was essentially nominated by a minority of Republicans and Democrats, right? Seeing that, they have adopted bylaws last year to where the Republicans in the caucus will nominate a speaker from the Republicans.
Yeah,
right?
but the problem you have is some of these same Republicans who are on this email that's uncovered mm-hmm. with Trey Martinez Fisher saying, no, we're not agreeing to support that choice.
Exactly.
We want to work with this guy over here.
Exactly. And the Republican Party of Texas has put out a pledge for just about a year now. Not every Republican in the House has signed on to that. In fact, you see a lot of the people who haven't are on that email.
Yeah. Well, really high stakes and a lot more to come in this speaker's race.
Yes.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome on the program this week State Rep Matt Rinaldi out of Dallas County. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Rinaldi.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so I wanted to have you on to talk about an issue that you've been a champion on in the Texas legislature, and it's about the issue of local liberty. And I think nothing really stands out, maybe on the national scale right now, than these stories you see out in California. We always pride ourselves in Texas that we don't want to be the same as California. Well, out in California, they're banning everything. They're banning straws, right? The evil straws, sending people to jail for that. And you've been kind of a promoter of local liberty. So, you know, what's the philosophy from a conservative in the legislature of, you know, what do we do about these out of control local regulations?
Well, I think the philosophy is government at every level needs to stand up for the individual liberties of the citizens of Texas. And if that means, state governments recognize that local governments are infringing on individual liberty, it's their duty to stop it. It's local government's duty to not do it in the first place. We recognize in our Constitution and everywhere that liberty trumps government control. And liberty trumps what government officials like to call local control. On another level, as a conservative, we like local control. The most local of control is the voter.
Right, the individual.
And the individual. So when local governments are trampling on the rights of the individual, we are effectively instituting local control, the individual over himself. And we do this on a number of issues, which is why Texas is not California. And won't be any time in the future.
Well, and it's a high-stakes fight here in Texas. I mean, obviously, people think of Texas as, oh, this is a red state. It's a deep red state, very Republican. Republicans win. You know, and Republicans control every level of state government. But the reality is you're up there in Dallas County, and the Democrats are in control of the local government apparatus, you know, there. And you see the same thing down in Houston and down in San Antonio. And you see some pretty wacky policy come out of these local governments.
Yeah, you do. And you know, the Democrats can't win victories on a state level. So they adopt whatever philosophy they can to try to institute their philosophy on an urban level. Now, of course, if we tried to do that, they would go crazy. If every rural area in Texas decided to ban abortion, they wouldn't be trumpeting local control.
Right.
They would be going crazy.
Right.
So it seems to be something that they use that's issue specific. You know, when we had the texting while driving ban, which effectively usurped local control of cities to not institute the ban. You didn't hear a bunch of liberals saying, "Oh, local control." Well, no, it's issue specific when it suits them.
Right. They want a universal statewide mandate of whatever policy it is that they're championing in these little pockets. So, you know, state policy. You know, I mentioned the straw ban out in California, where it's literally technically send you to jail if you give a free straw to somebody. And we had our own version of that here in Texas with the bag bans, which you were kind of a big opponent of. You did a lot of work to fight against that.
Yeah, I mean, the bag ban is in many respects as absurd as the straw ban. Local government usurping the freedom of contract of businesses and homeowners with no real justification for it. It didn't have an environmental impact. What we found in our research is it actually hurt the environment because the multi-use bags that you'd pay a dollar for were actually 12 times thicker and were still discarded. And yep. Not used as multi-use bags.
Yeah, I know in my experience of living in the city of Austin, they banned bags. They banned the old, cheap, efficient, as I called them, the environmentally friendly thin plastic bag, and required me to pay 25 cents for a heavy gauge plastic bag, which, you know, it's really nice to have a heavy gauge plastic bag, even for 25 cents. But, you know, if you don't use them or you kind of use them up, where do they go? Right in the garbage like everything else.
Yeah, for 25 cents. And you know, it also was a public health hazard. You had these reusable bags. The number one carrier of foodborne illness is vegetables, fresh vegetables that you buy at the store. So the bags were oftentimes unsanitary. They also hurt businesses, not only because you'd purchase less if you had to purchase bags, but one of the executives in Kroger told me that they were having a problem in those areas with theft because, you know, obviously the bag's a signal you paid for your stuff. And with everybody walking out without bags, it was difficult to see who was shoplifting.
Oh, yeah. You just come in with your own bag, bag your stuff up, and then walk right out. I guess it would be easy to do that. I think that at the end of the day, it's less about the practical policy question here. And just, you know, to some extent, it's two things. One, it's the absurdity of it. The idea that I'm going to go to jail or be fined or what have you for giving somebody a hundredth of a penny worth of free plastic, right? It's just kind of insane.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it's about statewide policy and about state law. So apparently there was already a state law on the books, and you kind of went about as an attorney saying, hey, we need to follow the law, not create patchworks of other laws that conflict with state law.
Yeah, and you know, it's a patchwork of regulation when you let cities regulate in certain areas. Like, you can't have different gun laws in different cities. You have to do research anytime you cross city lines. We're a mobile culture, and, you know, we deserve uniform rules. Also, with things like the bag ban, they influence more people than live in the city. A lot of people work in Dallas that don't live there or are affected by this.
Sure.
It isn't only the city voters who are affected. And we already had a law in the books. It's true. I proposed a law which basically clarified what the existing law said. But we also, there was a lawsuit going on. Me and about 20 or 25 legislators filed an amicus brief And the state law was actually upheld. The bag bans statewide were overturned. And I think it was a huge victory for individual liberty.
Yeah, no, it's great to see conservative leaders out there saying, you know, we're not going to tolerate this kind of thing. You know, we have local governments running around and trying to act outside of state law, act outside of the Constitution. And you know, we're going to go to the courts and do our part as leaders to say, hey, you know, I demand that you actually follow the law.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so we don't have absurd regulations like California, which incidentally, now you will actually go to jail for longer if you give someone a straw than if you knowingly give them AIDS.
It's just insanity. It makes you wonder, what's wrong with these local governments that do these things? So let's talk about the principle of the thing. So, I mean, beyond trying to have a uniform state law, the practicality of it, the absurdity of the policies that are imposed, you know, to some extent, I see this as a sovereignty question. You know, where are the people sovereign at what level? And is that something, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people say the cities came from the states, and I think the Federalist Papers recognize that the state is the state's the most effective level of government for regulating individuals, because the city or local governments are more vulnerable to special interests or sure. factions. And they didn't mean like special interests like lobbyists. They mean special interests like amped up groups of people. And if you go to any city council meeting when there's a hot button issue of the day and you see a bunch of amped up groups of people that just want to do something now, you can kind of see what James Madison was talking about.
Yeah. Activist groups on the one hand, and then maybe on the other hand, you have the NIMBY crowd who say, well, I'm going to oppose to anything that, you know, may affect anything involving me, right? As is opposing other people's property rights. You see a lot of that.
Yeah. And, you know, regulation on the state level, it's close to the people. You know your state rep usually, but, you know, a little more methodical, a little more measured. And, you know, we aren't as adept to these implementing these deprivations of liberty that you could be in a city council meeting where there's a lot of amped up people.
Yeah. So what do you say to those who criticize, you know, obviously you're a conservative state rep, run as a conservative in the Republican primary, and everybody knows Republicans are all about federalism and a limited federal government. And they say, well, this is local control. It's kind of like local control. We have state control of things, and that's good as opposed to the federal government. So isn't it better that we have local government control over things as opposed to the state government? Isn't local better always, or why not?
Well, it is when it's an area of actual legitimate government regulation or activity, right? Like, so if your school system, if you concede that the government has a duty to provide for an efficient method of public schooling, the way in which you do that is probably best done at the local level rather than the state level, because you know your students, you know your kids, you can better, you know, come up with a curriculum and method of educating. But that doesn't give the local government a license to deprive individuals of liberty. When we implicate a liberty interest of the people, like the right to contract or Second Amendment rights, every level of government should be checking every law passed that they have a discretion over to make sure that no liberty interest is being abridged.
Yeah, I think that
we're doing.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, it ultimately comes down to individual rights. I mean, what is the purpose of government? What are we trying to actually accomplish here? Well, securing the rights of the people. That's what the whole enterprise is supposed to be about. Well, you know, I'm starting to run out of time here, but before we wrap up, I wanted to give you an opportunity. Tell listeners where they can learn more about you, more about your campaign, and more about your work in the legislature.
You can go www.mattrinaldi.com or Facebook and Twitter is Matt Rinaldi TX.
Cool.
Check out our campaign. We're running for re-election right now in Northwest Dallas County.
Great, great. Well, I appreciate you joining me, Representative Rinaldi, and appreciate all the good work you do on behalf of the people of Texas.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers Program? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials in order to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearer logo on it. As a promo, we gave away a beautiful custom-engraved Glock handgun. Sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S.com.
In this week's commentary, Michael Quinn Sullivan tells us about the dangers of TDS.
I'm not sure who coined the phrase Trump derangement syndrome, but it's real, and it's causing otherwise right-thinking people to consider voting for leftists. And that's just crazy. With the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. Without debating the merits of President Trump's, how should I say it, boisterous, bombastic, colorful social media personality and personal life, I think we can all acknowledge the president simply isn't everyone's cup of tea. He ran on the promise to disrupt the status quo, and whatever else one thinks of him, Donald Trump has done just that. Wrongly? Too much? Maybe, but you have to say this, he's governing exactly how he campaigned. Let's also acknowledge a few facts. The economy's doing well, unemployment has dropped to historic lows, the regulatory state is being cut back, Obama's legacies of socialized medicine and environmental extremism are being tossed in the trash can. The long-promised move of the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem finally happened. No thanks, by the way, to the presidencies of two Bushes, a Clinton, and an Obama. While Trump causes whirlwinds of media hysteria over his tweets, his administration is by and large accomplishing the substantive policy reforms on social and fiscal matters that conservatives have long paid lip service to supporting. Lip service, if not actually doing. Well, now it's being done. Yes, yes, you don't see it in the newspapers. You know, they're too busy theorizing how Hillary could still walk into the White House, or they're parsing Trump's early morning tweets. All this leads me to the derangement being expressed by some conservatives and some alleged conservatives. I've seen it in establishmentarian guys like Bill Kristol and in conversations with rank-and-file activists. They all claim to be so embarrassed by everything about Trump's personality that they're going to just vote for Democrats up and down the ballot. Somehow, in this deranged way of thinking, that'll show Trump. Well, let's talk about that. What precisely will it show him? What does electing a Democrat to a Justice of the Peace position show Trump? What does filling a state-level appeals court with Constitution-hating Democrats do to Trump? What does putting a pro-abortion Democrat in the state legislature or a big tax Democrat in Congress accomplish? You see, here's the inescapable problem. When a Republican candidate runs as a conservative for a particular seat but loses to a Democrat due to Republican voters suffering from Trump derangement syndrome, all that's recorded is that Republicans voted for Democrats. Elections have consequences. Public policies are decided in elections. Whether property taxes in Texas will be reformed in the 2019 legislative session will be determined by how many conservative Republicans are elected to the state house. Flipping a state house seat from Republican to Democrat in a fit of deranged anger at President Trump will only result in Democrats holding the seat to fight against property tax reform. You say you're a pro-lifer who will vote for a Democrat because you don't like Trump? Well, congratulations. You're fully funding Planned Parenthood. You say you're a free market conservative who will vote for a Democrat because you don't like Trump's style? Well, congratulations. You're imposing more taxes and regulations on your neighbors. Using an election to send a message to someone not on the ballot is not just silly. It's deranged. Because while someone might think that voting for a Democrat down ballot will send a message to someone, what it really does is elect a Democrat. When you vote for a Democrat, all you're really doing is voting for a Democrat. As the old saying goes, friends don't let friends vote for Democrats, even friends suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
That's it for this show. Thanks for listening and come back next week.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.